coming up on this episode, the goal scorer like no other.
He had such an eye for goal that he would have scored in any league in the world.
And the manager like no other.
Brian just absolutely exploded. And basically it was, we've just lost a football match. Nobody in this club laughs when we've lost a football match. You're fired.
Plus, you'll hear about the memorable job interview.
There was a long boardroom table, and Brian at one end of the table, me at the other. And Sam Longson, the chairman, he said, well, we've had a discussion, and we'd like to offer you the job. And quite innocently, I said, well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to accept. I'll look forward to working with Brian, bearing in mind how well I knew him. And it was the young man, from now on, you will call me Mr. Clough or boss.
There's also a classic story of Cloughy's makeshift goalkeeper.
And then he said, get yourself in goal. So I'm all suited, like three-piece suit and everything on. I trotted towards the Roker end, and Brian Clough proceeded to shoot footballs into the back of the net like Exocet missiles. I mean, I didn't even see a ball, never mind save one.
All that and more great stories coming up.
I had one of the experiences that I will never forget as long as I live.
Hello, it's Simon Clough here. This is the Green Jumper podcast with Marcus Alton.
I used to be full of myself when I was younger. As you can tell now by me talking, I've calmed down and gone a little bit quiet.
Hello, it's the Green Jumper podcast with myself, Marcus Alton, the editor of the Tribute website, brianclough.com. And my guest today is someone who worked closely with Brian Clough for several years and witnessed at first hand one of his greatest signings. It's hello to Malcolm Bramley. Thanks for joining us today.
That's a pleasure. Good to talk to you.
And to you too. Now, you first encountered Brian Clough when you worked at Sunderland. What was your role at the club at the time?
Well, I started at Sunderland as an office boy when I was 15. And then I was made assistant secretary. So I was assistant secretary when Brian was signed from Middlesbrough. And, of course, that was a big signing in those days. Cloughy had virtually scored a goal a game at Middlesbrough and been one of our local rivals. It was a huge signing, and he carried on scoring goals for fun for us. But in those days, very small backroom staff, whether it was in the office or in the training staff. So it was all a big team and a very close-knit team. So I got to know the players very well, and Brian in particular.
What was the player's reaction when Brian did sign from Sunderland? Did he settle in quite quickly?
They were very wary because there'd been problems in the dressing room when he was at Middlesbrough. He was captain at Middlesbrough, as you probably know. And at one stage, they had a vote, the players amongst themselves, to try and get him voted out as captain. Because a very abrasive personality in those days. Well, he was always in a brave personality. So they were, the players were wary of him. But the reality was they knew he was a great goal scorer. So they had huge respect for him as far as playing was concerned. But he was quite a loner in the dressing room. You know, at the time, players mixed quite readily, and there was the usual drinking culture amongst some people. But from my memory, Brian never got involved very much at all with that. So they had huge respect for him as a player. They didn't particularly like him as a person.
Well, as you say, he did his business on the pitch, really. And he said his happiest days, actually, as a player were at Sunderland. It was something like 54 goals, I think, from 61 games before that terrible injury that we'll come on to. Can you remember the type of impact he had on the pitch at the time?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've watched thousands of games in my lifetime. Lots of great centre-forwards. And I still say that Brian Clough is definitely amongst the top three centre-forwards that I've ever seen. because he could do everything. You know, you get some forwards whose strength is goal poaching, that they get a lot of goals from in the 6 yard area, or the heading ability. Brian Clough could do everything. So he would score goals from the 6 yard. He would score goals from the edge of the penalty area. And I always remember, funny how you remember some great goals when you look back on.
Yeah.
And we played Blackburn. And I think it was Matt Woods who was the centre half of Blackburn in those days. And I always remember just inside the Blackburn half, there was a bouncing ball and Clough lobbed the ball over Matt Wood's head, and before it bounced, he hit it from about 35 yards and it went right into the top corner like a missile.
Wow.
And if you talk to older Sunderland fans like me and you say, can you remember some of Brian Clough's goals? Nearly always that one will come up. So he was he was just a great centre forward.
Yeah.
And if he hadn't had the injury, which we'll obviously talk about, if he hadn't had that, it does make you wonder whether he would have become one of the greatest goal scorers of all time.
Exactly. And some people would say, well, he scored the goals mainly in the old second division, but I don't think there's any doubt he would have been a top goal scorer in the highest tier, wouldn't he?
Oh, definitely. I don't think there's any doubt about that at all. I think he had such an eye for goal that he would have scored in any league in the world.
Yeah. Well, we've sort of touched on it a little bit, but that terrible injury that he had in December 62, were you there on that day?
Yes, yeah. Well, I was assistant secretary then, and it was a Boxing Day. We were playing Bury. And it was a typical, horrible northeast, windy, cold. There had been some snow, but there wasn't any snow on the pitch. And one of my jobs was to go on the pitch with the referee and the two managers because it needed a pitch inspection. And the game really shouldn't have been played. There was a lot of ice on the pitch. Both managers wanted to go ahead. We're expecting a full house of over 50,000, and they put a big lot of pressure on the referee, so the game did go ahead, and we were flying high at the top of the league at that time, the top of the old second division.
Yes.
And we got a penalty, and Charlie Hurley, our great centre half, who was the captain at the time, missed a penalty, and we were under a bit of pressure. And there was a long ball came through from our fullback, Len Ashurst. And it was a 50-50. And actually, Brian blamed Len for the injury because he always said that it wasn't a good ball through. It actually was a very good ball. The keeper came out. Brian Clough and the keeper both went for it. And you could tell straight away that something wasn't right. And he tried to get up. And there's some great pictures, actually, of him crawling along the ground.
Mm.
And I don't know if you know this, but Bob Stoker was the centre-half.
Yes, at Bury,
For Bury. Obviously, our future manager when we won the Cup in 73.
Yeah.
And he stood over Brian and called him a cheat, amongst other things. And Brian Clough never spoke to Bob Stoker again the rest of his life. But in those days, there were obviously no mobile phones. And one of the trainers came dashing up to the office and said, you need to ring for an ambulance, which I did. And at the bottom of the stairs at Roker Park, down from the boardrooms, etc., there was a foyer area and some big entrance doors. And I had to open the entrance doors as the stretcher came through with Brian on it. And I will always remember him saying, Mark, that's it. I'm done for. And, of course, they found out that he'd got a cruciate injury, which in those days nobody really came back from. some players do now,
yes,
after quite a long break. So that really looked as though it was the end of it.
Yes.
And he spent a year and a half trying to come back. And during that time, I had one of the experiences that I will never forget as long as I live. Do you know, I think everybody has maybe one or two things during their life, or
yes,
incidents that are very, very special. And this was one of them.
This was at Roker Park, wasn't it?
This was at Roker Park, yes. And during the summer, when we were selling season tickets, we used to show people around the seats that were available for sale. And I'd just shown a couple round one of the seats in one of the stands, and I was standing in the tunnel. And what Brian used to do day after day was he would run up and down the terraces at the Roker end, which was a huge, great, steep cop area. You'd go up and down for hours.
Yes.
He was doing that. And he came down from the terrace, came along the track, and he said, "Mark, will you go and get me a ball?" So I said, "Yeah, I'll go and get you a ball." So I went down to the boot room, get a ball, threw it on the pitch. I thought, well, that's it then. And then he said, "Right, get yourself in goal." I said, "What?" He said, "Get yourself in goal." So I'm all suited, like three-piece suit and everything on. So I trotted towards the Roker end. And Brian Clough proceeded to shoot footballs into the back of the net like Exocet missiles. I mean, I didn't even see a ball, never mind save one. And stadium completely and utterly deserted.
Wow.
And we've been doing that for about 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, and all of a sudden there's this voice, it was Bramley, that came from the tunnel. And it was George Crowe, who was the secretary, who was my boss.
Right.
Quite a fearsome character. Get yourself in here. Get yourself back to the office. I don't pay you to play football with the likes of him. The likes of him being the fact that the directors were wanting to try and get Brian to finish completely because they wanted the insurance money.
Right.
So I looked at Brian and I said, "What do I do?" And he said, "Tell him to F off."
That's your boss.
yeah. So I thought about it for a couple of minutes and I thought it was probably not the wisest thing to do.
No.
So I went back up to the office and I got a big telling off. But what was interesting was it must have been about 2 or 3 months later when I was in his office. He said, "Remember when I told you to come in when you were playing football with Brian Clough?" I said, "Yes, Mr. Crow." He said, "You know what, if I'd have been in your shoes, I would have stayed out there as long as I possibly could, because you will never, ever forget that moment." And he was right. The one regret I have is that there wasn't a camera to take a picture of it, because it would have looked so strange. Brian in just his shorts, no top, me in a three-piece suit, having balls battered at me in the Roker end. So,
oh, wow. Wow.
Something never to be forgotten.
Exactly. And he must have been quite fit then, if he was hitting the ball that well, that you know, he'd recovered quite well at the time.
Yeah. He was coming, it'd been over a year, and he was coming towards the, not far from the start of the new season. And that's when he did play a couple of reserve games, and then he played a couple of games in the first division, because we'd got promotion by then.
Yes.
That was 1964. And he scored once against, I think it was against Leicester, but then it was very clear to him and the medics that there's no way that he was going to be able to play football at that level again.
Yes.
So it was a sad time all concerned, yeah. really,
yes.
apart from the directors who got their insurance money.
Yes, yeah, it was a tough time for Brian Clough, certainly. But he did have a testimonial, didn't he? And it attracted, I think, over 30,000 people
to
come along. Yeah. Were you involved in arranging that at all?
I was involved in part of that. There was mainly a committee in those days when they had testimonials. It tended not to be people at the clubs that had a great deal to do with it. The player concerned used to have an organising committee.
Yes.
Brian did all right out of it. I think there was 30,000, and he made a few bob.
Yes, yes. I think there were lots of tributes in the programme that was produced as well. And of course, he did go on to be the youth coach at Sunderland for a little while, which would have given him some experience of management in those early days.
Yes. Well, he did very well. I think he got the youth team to certainly to the Youth Cup semi-final. The manager, Alan Brown, who was the manager who signed Brian, he left at this stage. He left after the 64 promotion season because the players were all on a bonus, obviously, for promotion, and the directors refused to give Alan Brown anything at all for managing the promotion team. So he resigned. And George Hardwick, who used to play for Middlesbrough, he took over from Alan Brown. And he thought a lot of Brian. And he was the one that suggested that he should become a coach and get some experience. Did very well. But then eventually George got the sack. And Ian McCall, who used to be the Scotland manager, came along.
Right.
And from day one, Brian and Ian McCall didn't get on. And that's when he eventually ended up as manager of Hartlepool. And was Hartlepool's yes. manager for a few seasons. And then he went to Derby.
Yes, at Derby. You became the club secretary when Brian was there. How did that come about?
Well, it was strange, really. I got a phone call one day, and it was Brian on the phone. Hadn't spoken to him since he left Sunderland, and he said, "Can anybody hear this call?" So I said, "Well, yes, they can." He said, "All right." He said, "Give me a ring back when you can, somewhere from a private phone." So I rang him back a couple of hours later, and he said, "We're making changes down here." He hadn't been there very long, maybe 6 months. "We're making changes," he said. "The secretary, the assistant secretary is going to be leaving. The chief scout's going to be leaving. I'm not too sure about the groundsman. How do you fancy it?"
Mm.
So I said, "Well, it depends what you're talking about." I said, "Don't fancy coming as your groundsman." But he said, "No," he said, "I was thinking about secretary." So he said, "If you're interested, obviously you'd have to come down for an interview." And I was quite torn, really, because I was a local lad. Sunderland were my team. And even though I was working at the football club, the players were all friends, they were all heroes. But it sounded interesting, the thought of possibly getting a job and working with this fella.
Yeah.
So I had to go for an interview, and Brian, I went down on the train, and Brian met me at the Midland Hotel, just outside the Midland Hotel. I drove to the ground, and we went into the old baseball ground and into the boardroom, where I think he'd introduced me to Peter Taylor in his little ante room, first of all, and then went into the boardroom. And of course, in those days, most of the directors were local businessmen. So I think there was a long boardroom table, and there was five directors on one side, five on the other, none of them any younger than 70, and Brian at one end of the table, me at the other. And they fired various questions at me. And Sam Longson, the chairman, said, "Right, go and have a walk around the ground and come back in about 10 minutes, and we'll call you back in." So they called me back in, and they said, "Well, we've had a discussion, and we'd like to offer you the job." So quite innocently, and probably you need to remember here, I'm 21 years old.
Right.
So I'm still green behind the ears. They said, we'd like to offer you the job. And quite innocently, I said, well, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to accept. And I'll look forward to working with Brian.
Mm.
Bearing in mind how well I knew him. And it was the young man, from now on, you will call me Mr. Clough or boss. So I didn't say anything to that, but obviously he gave me a lift back to the station.
Yes.
And I said, what's all this business about boss and everything else? Because obviously I knew him well. I knew his wife. I knew Simon and Nigel, the young lads.
Mm.
And he said, if I'm going to do anything at this football club, I've got to have absolute and complete and utter control. And he said, part of it is about how people will address me. And he said, nobody, and I'm talking about the directors as well, he said, nobody will call me Brian. He said, away from the club, we'll go to dinners, you'll come round to our house, and that's fine. And that's the way it was in the club.
Yes.
That was the first indication of a level of control that I experienced in the time that I was there. Not control just of me,
mm.
but of everybody.
Yes. And things obviously really did take off in that second season. And it must have been a wonderful time to be working there with Clough and Taylor. They put on some wonderful performances. And I think after a rare defeat, though, there was an unfortunate incident involving the tea lady.
Yes. Well, we had a tea lady. I think her name was Doreen, but I stand corrected on that. It's
yes.
a long time ago. She was full-time, and she used to make, during the week, she used to make ham sandwiches for all the staff at lunchtime. It was always ham sandwiches. Occasionally, you might get a bit of tomato in it. but when you think of the diets that players are on these days, it never changed, ham sandwiches. But on a match day, she would prepare the food for the directors in the boardroom and the visiting directors, visiting scouts, etc. So she was obviously there this particular match day. And unusually, we had lost a home match. And there was a corridor that came out the tunnel, down the corridor, and the home dressing room was on the right-hand side, and just a bit further up was the little kitchen that Doreen operated in. And Brian was walking down the corridor, and I was just a few yards behind him. And Doreen came out of the kitchen, and she was laughing her head off. And Brian just absolutely exploded. And basically, it was, we've just lost a football match. Nobody in this club laughs when we've lost a football match. You're fired.
Oh.
So she looked at him and thought, well, is he joking about this? And he said, get your handbag, get out of the club now. And Doreen, in floods of tears, went running up the corridor. And I think she'd been there for 20 years. One of those people at the club that everybody knew and everybody really liked. So on the Sunday morning, myself, Brian and Peter Taylor, we always used to have a meeting on a Sunday morning, which was about what's happening the following week, about travelling arrangements and all that sort of thing.
Right.
And I said to him, you know, that you sacked Doreen yesterday. Have you had to think about it? I said, problem is, if this gets into the local press, it's not going to look very good, you know. He said, I couldn't care less about the local press. That woman laughed when we lost a match. So I said, you're not reconsidering. No, it's not happening. It's not happening. Peter Taylor tried to persuade him. Mm. No chance. So I thought, well, we can't do anything else about this. So on the Monday morning, I went down the corridor about 8:30. Doreen is in the kitchen making ham sandwiches. So I said, well, it's lovely to see you, Doreen, but I thought boss had sacked you. She said, "Well, you'll never guess what. You'll never guess this." He said, "There's a knock on the door yesterday lunchtime, and it's Mr. Clough. And he's got the biggest bunch of flowers you've ever seen in your life." He said, "Right, Doyne, what are you doing for lunch?" "Well, I'm not doing anything, Mr. Clough." "Right, get your coat on." She said, "He took me out to a hotel, had the finest Sunday lunch I've ever had in my life, dropped me back at the house, and he said, 'Right, get yourself in the kitchen, 8:30 tomorrow morning, but don't you ever, ever laugh when and if we lose a football match again.'" So Doyne was reinstated. But that again was, in a sense, was another example of Brian Clough had made a decision. He'd obviously thought about it. He'd listened to what me and Peter Taylor had said, but he wasn't going to say anything to us.
No.
And he just appeared on our doorstep the next day.
Amazing.
And that was all, you know, that was the way he operated.
Yes. Well, I'm glad she got her job back anyway. And she sounds like a popular lady there. So it probably was good for morale as well, I would think.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I could have chatted with Malcolm Bramley for hours. It was so interesting listening to his memories. Please look out for part two of our conversation coming soon. And I must thank Sunderland's Roca Report and Away the Podcast for helping to put me in touch with Malcolm. The second part of our chat is just as interesting, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join me again next time for more memories of the great man in the green jumper.